Kol HaLashon, the entire Torah, everywhere.
Hi everybody, welcome to Coach Menachem Bernfeld, this beautiful Sunday night, May 2nd, 2025. Thank you for joining us. March 2nd. May, okay, sorry, we're going to go back. March 2nd. Okay, we're going to start off first, give me 1 second. Tonight's shiur, shiur 223. Again, all the people that come every week, really appreciate it. Someone, we're really, Menachem, for real, this is really almost 5 years. March is, might be the...
Celebrates.
Yeah. So we're going to be going soon into our 6th year. Oh, wow. Thank you. And, we really appreciate everybody for coming on, for posting, letting people know about it and being part of the Menachem, Coach Menachem family. And it's a place of Sichas Chaverim, a place to talk through a lot of important inyanim. And tonight we're going to talk through the most important inyan of all. We'll get to it in a second. Again, if anyone wants to join the WhatsApp chat, WhatsApp me at 732-314-1710. I will give you the link to the community chat. You can join there. We can go to menachemberful.com, get all the flyers of the speakers, upcoming speakers, the replays, and all the Coach Menachem hack in the world. For other people that are watching this on YouTube, you click on the subscribe button so you can get all the posts as they come out live as Menachem puts up the videos. Or just click on the like button. And thank you to all the advertising sponsors, like Scoop here in Lakewood, Ellie and Aaron from Five Town Central, and Kyla Kaufman from JCN. Again, if anybody's here the first time, every Sunday night at 9 p.m. on this Zoom ID, we have different shiurim, different topics, different presenters. Let's share next week. We have a world-famous therapist who's been on a few times, Ramatis Miller here from Lakewood, one of the biggest therapists in Lakewood, taking on a very big topic, navigating the challenges of personality disorders, support for the family members and spouses. So it's really focused on the family members and dealing with people with all these different personality disorders, many different types. And it should be a very powerful program. Please join us. If you know if it could be helpful to anybody, please let people know. Tonight's shiur is shiur 223. And we're going to turn to the gematria to the Agoyin Atzadik, Gemarna Echrid, to give us the gematria for 223. Here we go.
Shalom Lebrach, everyone, to Zoom shiur number 223. Finding joy in any circumstance, Purim, clean humor, and lasting happiness. In order for someone to find joy in any circumstance, he has to realize that everything is from Hashem, and Hashem is in complete control. Shlitz itself with the night's gematria of 223, Ein Oy Luvade. There's nobody besides Hashem.
Beautiful, beautiful. And we're going to turn it over now to Coach Menachem. And Coach Menachem opened it up at Sunday night. People asking me, what's tonight's topic? Is it stand-up comedy? Is it Latzonis? Is it therapeutic comedy? What is it? What are we talking about tonight?
Mishamechem is other Marvin Bezimcha. Very clear. Should be clear. But yeah, welcome everyone. Number 223. We have this first to have Yehuda back with us. And, hopefully we'll have a good time. Before we go to tonight, just I want to thank all those who sent feedback from last week. We had Rav Daniel Lapin with us discussing different ideas, you know, the men, the women, working, the idea of doing chesed. You know, don't look at it as work. You do chesed and then people pay you with notes of appreciation. Very interesting way of looking at it. You know, the work that you do is really a chesed that other people need, and they pay you with notes of appreciation. The women loved it, the concept of, you know, the men signed the ksuba, that they're going to take responsibility, and they have to be the one. Somebody did mention to me the idea of, first of all, today's day is the way of living.
Kol HaLashon.
Many, many, both work, the men and the women. But the culture that we live in, that here, especially here in Lakewood, you know, many people, the husband sits and learns and they expect the wife to take the achrayas, the responsibility. But he did mention that if you think about it, talking the times of the ksuba, when the women were home and they had to do the hard work at home, talking about weaving the clothing and cleaning at the river and baking and cooking and taking care of the house. So things have changed. Talking about having a cleaning lady and buying everything in the grocery store. So today the women are out there helping out with the ksuba. So it was a very interesting topic. For those who didn't listen to it, can always listen to the recording. So tonight, Mishnah Chesadim Mar Besimcha, Yehuda is a special person that can help us out a little bit with that. But many have a question: what does Simcha mean? There are many people who have a hard time, especially now. They're even more worried because now you have to be happy. So what am I supposed to do now? And what's if I don't want to be happy? And if there are things that are going on in my life that I just can't, don't tell me to be happy. So it's a good question. Telling people how to feel is an interesting, So the Gemara says the idea of, it says Rabbi mekame de posach lul rabbanon, before he started giving shir, before he gave shir, he used to open with a milsa de bedichasa, with a something exciting, you want to call it a joke, and then afterwards they started learning. And it helped, the idea of helping to see different perspectives, you know, it usually a joke takes you out of where you are. And I think that's something very special, especially when it's in therapy, seeing things one way. If you can go out, come back in, it can help. I don't know where this is, the Gemara or Medrash, but I think one of the places also Esther mentioned, Esther was, she was Kuf Chav Zayin, the years of sorrow. She lived Kuf Chav Zayin years, and now Esther was, I don't know, or Ahasuerus was king over Kuf Chav Zayin Medinas. Just these interesting ideas before they go into the serious learning, they started with a, how are you, what's going on, what's machsta, and then lighten up the situation a little bit, and then they can go into serious stuff. So it's important to understand when. You know, many people sent in the questions of, you know, being happy-go-lucky is not the answer, and especially by us, Yidden. You know, when Mashiach comes, maybe we'll be happy, but today, how can we walk around, especially what's going on in the world? So all of these questions are amazing. It's something to talk about. But I hope that tonight we'll get to talk about these questions, but also some practical laughing. You know, Yehuda, you'll tell us why it's so important, and then you'll help us actually get there for those who are ready, and for those who are not, maybe with a little bit of compassion, to say, you know what, just for a few minutes, I know there's heavy stuff going on in your life, but maybe for 2-3 minutes we can forget everything. Or maybe not. We can talk about it. So we should have a lot of siyata shmayim, etz Hashem, and hopefully we'll be able to get the idea of Mishnah Masada Maram Besimcha and to be able to use it, whether it's in therapy or every day in our life, and not only in Chodesh Adar.
Thank you, Coach Menachem, for the beautiful opening. Okay, let's get into it. Here we go. So tonight's topic, we titled it A Night of Therapeutic Comedy, Healing and Learning, Finding the Joy in Any Circumstance, Purim, Clean Humor, and Lasting Happiness. And we brought on Yehuda Albakasis, who's been on before. We had a great session with him. And,
Alcabas.
Alcabas. Yeah, whatever. It's all good.
He
reached out to me. You're getting very technical, Menachem. Like, don't be so technical, all right? Yehuda, whatever his name is.
Making me laugh.
The bottom line is, reached out to me, like, oh, let's go on again. And I was like, you know, it's Purim, and like, all the news and the whole world, everything is just so scary and so terrible. And you just live in this world of anxiety and like, what's going to be? And like, it's just so whatever. So obviously comedy is a big part of healing. My mother-in-law just told me before that they're finding people that are extremely sick with cancer or different types of illness, when they watch deep comedy, they have belly laughing, it actually cures part of their illnesses. And we know that for ourselves, anytime we get into the good laughter mode, it can really lift our spirits. It's hard to actually live in that mode because it's not reality, and it's hard to like turn it on and off. And maybe Huda could show me how to do that. But we're here to really have a good time tonight because we do all the deep therapy every Sunday night, and we do all the deep talking and all the serious stuff, and like, you know, what's going to be with the world, and what's going to be with the Klal Yisrael, what's going to be. But, you know, we need a chalat a little bit. I think I'm getting like all white from this. So I bring Huda back, you know, so he can give me a little, energy. So everything said tonight, don't hold against anybody. It's just going to be a little bit, right, Huda? We're going to keep
That's
it clean.
Right.
It's clean humor. You
clean.
It.
It's clean.
Clean
That's
humor.
Right. That's right.
I'm not getting in trouble for that, but right. Let's not take it all that seriously. Yehuda is a licensed clinical professional, LCSW, addictions and specialist, educator, passionate advocate for creativity, importance in education and mental health. Yehuda is extensively trained in the art of improv theater. That's actually a real thing. It's not a joke, right? Improv theater comedy. It's like a real thing.
A joke.
And performs regularly. He teaches improv comedy in groups therapy as an adjunct treatment for addictions, anxiety, and trauma. He maintains a private practice in Boca and is the host of the Improv Therapy Podcast, where he blends the world of therapy and comedy. And Yehuda, thank you for coming on tonight.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here with you guys.
I'm ready to laugh.
Yeah. I wanted to say, first of all, I don't know why, but whenever Menachem starts talking, I start chuckling. Is that like a normal reaction or is that just me?
It gives you the Rebbe vibes, you know what I mean?
I was like chuckling and I was noticing I was doing it and I was like, oh, I guess this is what happens.
Something going on. We'll talk about it.
Yeah. I think when I listen back to the podcast and your voice comes on, I could be anywhere and I'll start chuckling or whatever. Thanks for having me, guys. I'm excited to be here. This is my busy time of the year. A lot of people are reach out to me to, you know, talk about how they could make more jokes. And then in like 2 weeks, it goes completely silent for a whole year, which is fine. But this is my favorite time of year and it's always been my favorite time of year. Ever since I was very young and when I was very young, I don't know if this is going to be a shock to you guys, but I didn't really fit into the yeshiva system that well. And, I know I'm being very vulnerable here, but I didn't fit into the yeshiva system that well. And, you know, during this time of year, Rosh Chodesh Adar was kind of like the 2 weeks where I fit in, right? And it was like kind of the 2 weeks where I got to do a bunch of the stuff that got me in trouble the rest of the year. And, you know, I think back on that time and I think about really how meaningful it was to me. And it's definitely part of the reason why I've devoted my career to bringing out this part of, you know, the human experience and, you know, thinking about it kind of like what you guys are talking about. Like the world is very, very serious and it's very tense. And, you know, we need a laugh and we need to be able to relieve some of that tension. And I'm going to talk about how humor can do that in a more of a, you know, psychological way. You know, the need for it is great. The question is always, how do we do it in a healthy way? How do we do it where it's not bordering onto something where it's, you know, litzanus or frivolity, which is a word that only Jewish people use, right? Am I right about that? You ever hear a non-Jewish person say frivolity or alacrity? No. But those are the things, the concerns that people have, right? And those concerns are legitimate. For many years, I held back on really going all in on having fun and comedy and making jokes because I did not understand how to do it in a non-frivolous way. And so, now that I've spent some, you know, real good amount of time studying it, I do think that I have some insight into what makes us end up frivolous and what makes us the opposite of frivolous, I guess. We're going to get into all that. On top of that though, is I will tell you that I am somebody who observes a lot of things and I've observed a lot of things being a young kid who was diagnosed with potential. I observed a lot of things and I didn't say a lot of those things and now I say those things. So, not that they're going to be inappropriate, but they're somewhat unspoken sometimes. And, you know, I like to speak them out loud.
What about the diagnosis? Let us see it.
No, I just told you. Diagnosis was potential. My parents were devastated. They were like, is there any hope for him? And they were like, listen, he could end up being a therapist. And they were like, what happens if he has too much potential? And they said, he'll be a therapist and a comedian. They were really scared, yeah. Yep. So that's kind of my intro tonight. I have a lot that we'll get into as we go, but I think that's the core question, right? The core question is how do we do this in a positive way? I did want to actually, I forgot here, I did want to mention about Purim. You know, I think Purim is, you know, we all feel the magic of Purim, I think, in some way or another, you know, the like mazalos and just kind of like how things line up and there's just a magical energy. I've always felt there's a magical energy. I don't know if you'll believe this, but I love the song Misha, 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 Misha. I love that song. I love it. Most people, I think, have a kind of like, oh gosh, here we go. I love that song because it means perms here. I guess it's kind of like holiday music for the Geishevelt. You know, it's the same idea. I don't have it playing on a loop on my lawn like my neighbor does in Boca here, but I love it. I love it. And there's something magical about this time of year. And, you know, the magic, you know, from the spiritual angle of how, you know, we don't see Nisan and we don't see how the world is run and how Purim really, once we get to the end of the story, highlighted everything that was laid into it and how it was this perfectly crafted, like three act play where in act one, there was certain things that were laid in there, which were only going to pay off at the end of act two. And then, you know, everything getting resolved in a perfect way. It gives us that insight. It gives us that insight. This was now coming up 8 years ago. I lost my job 3 weeks before Purim. And my wife was pregnant with our second child. And I didn't know how we were going to get health insurance. I didn't know how we were going to have enough money to handle the situation. I remember I was talking to my Rav. And he said to me, you know, in a very sensitive way, he said to me, I feel like this is one of those situations where something good is brewing. And you know, and that's a hard thing to say to somebody when bad things are going on. I think he intuited that I could hear that at that moment, that I believed him, that I was on the same page, and I was on the same page as him. And I was looking for a job like crazy, and my wife went into labor and I had a lead for a job, and it was 10 in the morning and I got a phone interview with a treatment center. And, I was like, I'm going to step out of the room. And, you know, it wasn't like an act of labor to the point where, you know, it'd be like, kind of like, don't step out and make this phone call. I was like, we got time. I stepped out. I made the phone call. We set up an in-person interview for the next day. 6-7 hours later, my wife had a baby girl. And, the next morning I went in, I got a job with the exact same salary that I had before, in a place that was literally like almost the exact amount of distance away from my house, just south instead of north. And we were just like, okay, we were just like back in the same situation in a good way. And, we had already kind of thought about the name for our daughter, but we ended up having the name for our daughter have tremendous meaning. So our daughter's name is Esther Mazal.
I was actually thinking you're going to name your daughter like, you know, Ellis Treatment Center, you know, but okay.
Right. No, it's called, her name is First Step Detox.
Right.
Her name is Esther Mazal, and Mazal is my mother's name, and Svardi we name after the living, so we knew we were going to name her that. Esther for Purim, but then we were thinking about, you know, the hidden mazal and how that's like, that's everything for this time of year, you know? And so I think about how there's magic around Purim, and I would hate for us to miss the opportunity to capitalize on it. There's enough stuff for us to get down about, and the Jewish calendar, especially if you're Ashkenazi, has enough spots for you to get all, you know, womp. You have enough of those times. So I love this opportunity and I want to maximize it. And you know, Purim being the ultimate story of irony and humor is, I think, and magic is, it's our opportunity to capitalize on it. So that's what I'm doing here.
All right. Let's do the polls. You ready?
Let's do it.
3-question poll. Number one, what is your belief? Which one of these is your, I don't want to use the word belief even, but more like, which one goes with you? Life is serious. There's no place for jokes. A little humor is okay, but only at the right time. C, humor is necessary to navigate life's challenges. Or D, I believe in finding humor in everything. 2nd question. Do you believe humor can be a tool for emotional healing? 100% laughter is therapy. 2, maybe, depends on the situation. 3, not really. It's just entertainment. 4, actually, sometimes humor makes things worse. 3, what's the most powerful effect of laughter in your life? It helps relieve stress. 2, brings people closer together. 3, changes my perspective on challenges. Or 4, just an escape, nothing deeper.
Do we have to be quiet during the poll?
It's Jeopardy.
Oh, last time I told you you shouldn't know that it's a television show.
So jewelers off. My baby used to watch it. Okay, 5 more seconds. All right, here we go. Ready? You do with us?
Yes, I'm with you. I'm here.
Okay, let's share the results with everybody. Ready? Number one, what is your belief? 0% of people believe life is serious. There's no place for jokes. Nobody believes that. Like, everybody here is like, 13%, humor is okay, but only the right time. 71% of people, humor is necessary to navigate life's challenges. And number four, I believe in finding humor in everything. Huda, what's your opinion on this?
Number four, I want to bump that number up. There's humor in everything. That doesn't mean that you're always laughing, and it doesn't mean that you're always calling it out, but there's humor in everything. I want to bump that number up.
Can't say everything. Can't lose his job. Is not
that's right. Funny. That's right. That's why I say 99%. It's like the 99.9 killing germs, for Lysol or whatever.
Number two, do you believe humor can be a tool for emotional healing? 100%. Laughter is therapy. 63%. 33%. Maybe it depends on the situation. 2%. Not really. 1%. Actually, sometimes humor makes things worse. Duda, what's your answer to that?
All true. It's all true. Laughter is therapy, and sometimes it makes it worse. It definitely depends on the situation.
Sometimes when something happens, the guy makes a joke, and then the guy goes like psycho on him. How can you make a joke in the situation? And he goes like,
yes.
Like, I was just kidding. It came out wrong. I didn't mean it like that.
Right. And sometimes that person could be right, and sometimes that person could be absolutely wrong. Right? Like I think there are times where somebody getting upset about a joke is that might be an indicator that, you're a little too tightly wound sometimes. And then there's sometimes where you make a joke and it's like, you should not have made that joke. I have that. That happens to me. You should not have made that joke. But it's not a perfect science. That's part of the stress, I think, which we'll get into more, but it's stressful if you think about it because you're trying to define it and make it work where nobody's ever going to be offended, but we're still going to have a fun time and it's still going to be surprising.
Number three, what's the most powerful effect of laughter in your life? 43% helps relieve stress. 34% brings people closer together. 18% changes my perspective on challenges. 5% just a fun escape, nothing deeper. Yuda.
Changes my perspective on challenges. That's, I want to bump that number up too. I think one of the things that humor can do is it can give us a different angle of looking at a situation, right? Like Menachem, you referred to this in the beginning when you were talking about at the beginning of Shir or something like that. But like sometimes we look at something in humor land and it's like the backwards version of what's happening in real life. And then that allows us to contrast what real life actually is. Sometimes a joke is like, oh, imagine if we did the opposite of what we normally do. We do the joke all the time, actually. This is something that we do in my improv classes, is do the opposite of what this role would do in real life. So if you are a robber, so then be really forthcoming with your plan, right? And if you're a police officer, be like really accommodating and be really nice, right? And then we just run a scene like that. And it ends up being hilarious. And not only is it hilarious, I think sometimes it kind of gives us a full picture of like what we're dealing with in reality because we kind of looked at it, in a backwards way. Humor, changing our perspective on challenges, I think we could do some work in that area too. Bump that number up.
Okay, amazing. Let's get into it tonight. Anybody who wants to ask you a question or a joke or tell them a joke, text me first. Mm-hmm. I'll put you on. Good jokes are valuable. We're going to open up the questions. Text me. And mm-hmm. Let's start. Let's get tonight's going. Okay, Yuda, first question. I can see why it helps to let go on heavy things that I'm caring about. But I'm dealing with so much stress, I feel overwhelmed, I get anxiety. I can't just get myself to laugh. It doesn't work. So the first and basic question, somebody just feels stressed. We're talking about regular life stress. We're not talking about, life and death. We're not talking about that. Let's go back to the reality. We're dealing with nervousness, paying a bill, stress, kids, Israel, the world, blah, anti-Semitism, all that stuff. You just we're losing that sense of just laughing and getting into that. How do we start that and being real about that?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the first thing is that let's talk about the subject of jokes. Okay. So, there's, you can make a joke about another person. You can make a joke about yourself. You can make a joke about a situation. But let's talk about just little things in life that if you think about it, they're a little bit silly, right? So, I did a perm skit actually, 2020, right before COVID really hit hard. We actually had a COVID joke in there, which ended up not being a joke, where the old guy comes into the shul and he says, yeah, you gotta close the door. Things could come in. You could have COVID-19. And I thought I was being funny where I was like, oh, he's so ridiculous that he's trying to keep COVID out by closing the door. But then like a week later, everybody was masked up and like, you know, trying to keep COVID out with all these like crazy, whatever rituals. But we did a skit in my shul with an old guy who's sitting in the back of the shul who doesn't understand why nobody's allowing him to talk and all that kind of stuff. But that there was a security breach in the shul. Now the security breach in the shul was because the code to the door of our shul used to be 4. It used to be just the number 4, right? And this wasn't my idea. This was my scene partner's idea. He was like, let's blow that way out of proportion. Like, let's do a whole thing about how, you know, like somebody says the word 4 and then they freak out because they're like, now the code is out and we have to do this whole like mission and right. And I thought that was such a brilliant thing to pick up on. Like, it's ridiculous. You're right. It's ridiculous. The code to the door is 4. That's our security, right? And so we did a good 5 minutes on just the code of the door being 4. And it made me realize that like you can find ridiculous things anywhere, even in stressful situations. Obviously, like you were saying, there's situations which are just horrible. But like in day-to-day life, right? Like, do we realize how many silly things actually happen, right? And if we're looking out for them, we can find them in the smallest thing, and then we can enjoy it. It doesn't mean that we're making fun of anything. We're definitely not making fun of anyone else. We can just be like, hey, it's pretty ridiculous that, you know, our security system is just literally one number, right? So just as a starting point, we're carrying all the stress. There's so much going on in the world. Is there anything that you can think of that you would identify as this is pretty ridiculous or silly that happened today or yesterday? And start from there, right? Because it doesn't have to get canceled out by something else that's going on, right? Like, it, you know, you can think about, oh, there's so many other things going on in the world, so therefore this is not funny. I don't, correct me if you think I'm wrong here, but I don't necessarily see that as like negating the other.
It's just hard to get a person from one state when you're really in that situation of stress and you're like, why are people just walking around and making jokes?
Well, we have stress. Only bothers us. We like ruminate in that stress. We like live in that space.
Yeah.
It takes away the whole, what makes, I can say for myself, that sense of like belly laughing and freedom and like, is when you're not in anxiety mode. Like anxiety mode is like the opposite. For me, anxiety and stress mode is like sucks out that laugh. When you feel not anxiety, you feel like things are stable and good. Then when somebody does something funny or something happens funny, it's like, and I find like anxiety and fear is like the opposite, you know, like white, black.
Yes.
Like fear, humor.
Yes. And really, really humor can't exist if you're trying to control everything, right? Like when you're in a situation, where it's like everything's going wrong and you find humor in it, usually that humor comes from, I kind of give up on trying to control the situation. So when you have that high level of stress and you can't find any humor anywhere, chances are that you're trying too hard to control the world and you can't control the world. Now, when you cross over to the other side where you're like, I can't control the world, then you can feel this sense of relief of like, oh, so now I can actually enjoy parts of the world, which when I was on the other side actually made me upset and it was stressful.
Wow. What you're saying is what Arnav said, Einoid Milvadoi. To be able to let go.
What I meant, that was my intention with that. Yeah.
To be able to let go. I was saying, if you're walking around holding up the world.
Yeah.
Heavy. But once you can connect and see, you know, I guess it's not easy, but to have emunah b'tachon.
Yes, 100%. I taught my daughter this. I taught her that you know, sometimes we can laugh about something bad that happened to us, but we might not be ready yet, right? So we, sometimes she'll ask me, are we ready to laugh about this thing yet? And sometimes she'll tell me something and I'll be like, oh, she's referring to something bad that happened, but she seems like she's kind of smiling. I'll ask her like, oh, do you want to laugh about that? Are you ready to laugh about that? Right? Like, oh, you remember when I tripped or the other day? I mean, this was not funny in the moment. You know those hangers for skirts that have those clips on them? I stepped on one of those with my bare foot, fell into my laundry room, into a pile of laundry while I was holding my laptop. And my laptop, like, just went nicely on top of my freezer. And I was lying there in a dirty pile of laundry, and I was really mad. And now I think about it, it was like straight out of like a Charlie Chaplin movie or like, I don't know, something from just good slapstick humor, you know? Can we laugh about it yet? So maybe in the moment when our feelings are very intense, we're not ready to laugh about it, and that's okay. But are we letting go of control and like our insistence that we control everything? Or are we going to say like, yeah, we don't control everything. And so if I think back on it, kind of funny what happened.
Okay, Yehuda, let's go to a live question.
What about you? Arji, what about you? What about you laughing? You laughing?
Nothing. Everything in my life is serious.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm trying to crack you open a little bit here.
Not in the mood. Okay, let's go. You're on.
Perfect. I'm really happy I joined tonight. I find that when I'm very serious, and I like facts are facts, and when someone makes light of something or a joke out of something, and it misconstrues the fact, it like activates my sense of justice and that things have to be correct. And I find it really hard to laugh.
This is inappropriate, but I actually find that funny. Sorry.
Terrible. You're terrible. A follow up question is, is there a type of humor that you do enjoy?
Like a funny joke.
Like, what's an example? Not, you don't have to tell the joke, but like, what type of joke? Is it like do you like puns? What?
Like the chicken cross the road? Like one of those?
Not corny jokes. Like I can tell you one. When one door closes, the other one opens. Other than that, it's a pretty good car.
That's a good joke. I like that. That's a nice setup and structure. That's good. That's nice. I don't know. Originally, non-original, whatever. Okay. This is one of the hard parts of humor is that there's no like defined groups of like who likes what type of jokes, right? And so you make a joke, this happens as a comedian all the time, like people just don't find you funny. And you're like, I don't know, a lot of people found that funny. Like, yeah, I don't know, I don't like his stuff. He says too many jokes. Makes too many voices. Somebody earlier today, a friend of mine was telling me, he's like, I don't like when people do voices, it's cringy. I was like, I do voices. You know that. We're in the middle of talking about that right now. So, and you know, he was also messing with me because that's his brand of humor, is messing with people. And so, I think it's difficult because there is no defined group and there's no like, oh, these people who like this type of joke go here and this type go here. I think that we can kind of consider humor to be something that misses the mark a good percentage of the time. Right? And that's okay. And, you know, if you know what kind of humor you like, then you go more towards that humor, but you know that other people are not necessarily going to always be doing or, you know, performing or making those kind of jokes. And that just being like, hey, we're all a little bit different. Right? So like my type of humor, I love over the top reactions to things. Like that's my type of humor. But I also, I'll tell you one difference between me and a lot of my peers is that I don't typically love absurd humor. Like I like everything to be based in reality. So I like humor that's between, let's say, two people in a relationship. I'll give you an example. I wrote a sketch about a guy who doesn't get rhetorical questions. He doesn't get the concept of rhetorical questions, right? So every time someone asks him a rhetorical question, he answers it. And then his buddy goes, no, it was rhetorical. He didn't need to answer it. But then he starts getting mad at himself and he's like, I can't believe I always do this every time. I forget what a rhetorical question is. And he gets all angry at himself And then he starts acting out his anger on his friends, where he's like mad at them for asking him rhetorical questions, right? Meaning, this is my type of humor.
That's
Some people
hysterical.
Love it. What?
That's hysterical.
Oh, thank you. All right. Yeah. Okay. That's my type of humor. Some people really like where things are just absurd, where it goes into like, you know, you could have the rules of physics don't really apply. Like, think about old school cartoons.
I think a lot of people like when slapstick humor also. Like,
yeah.
Guy slips and falls into his basket. Like,
yes.
That's like a certain type of humor.
My wife loves that stuff and I can't watch it. She will be laughing, like in pain laughing, and it's just a compilation of people tripping. And I'm like, that looks like it hurt though. So she, right? So fine. So when we think about humor, I think it's an extra challenge is that like we want it to be universal, but it's not. It's not universal. And so I think we have to have a little bit of grace about other people's jokes. And also kind of just for ourselves, knowing that I can gravitate towards a certain type of humor, and like that's my spot. Like, some people love very cerebral puns, like that type of stuff. It's not my thing. So I won't, if you come to one of my shows, you're not going to necessarily hear me making those jokes. Right? Okay. Like, no harm done. I still love
but
you.
What if I want, like, I do want to be able to have that change of perspective, like that number you said you want above, but I did not select that.
Say that last part again.
I did not select that one, that humor changes my perspective on challenges.
Okay.
Like, it's like, no, this is what it is.
Yeah.
If you laugh, it like minimizes it, takes the strength out of the situation. I don't know. It just,
I think a perspective view, as long as this is wrong or right, like, and
that's right.
That's something they're dealing with, whether stressful or not, or something that you need to be serious about. It's really our perspective, how we go about it. Ultimately, somebody has to pay their mortgage. It's not a joke. We have to pay the mortgage, right? But ultimately, like, we could be like, we have to pay the mortgage and be super intense about it. Or we could be like completely like laughing and drunk and then totally miss the payment and like, you know, go in default. But we could also be like, it's a mind shift of more like, it's going to work out. We're going to be positive. Like, some of us believe, like, because it's a serious thing, it has to be a serious attitude towards it in a not fun way. It could still be serious, and we still have to go to work every day, but it doesn't mean while I'm at work, I can't do things I enjoy to do or enjoy. It doesn't have to be like, oh, where I have to be on my desk now, and I must, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it could be more, not that actually something changes at the end of the day, but the attitude is more of a joke, lighter, so our anxiety level, our heart rate, our general mood is more, not use the word joke, but more calmer and happier. Does that make sense?
Well, I love this point, because there are so many times in life where we don't lose anything by doing something in our minds while we are doing the thing which we are required to do, right? Like paying your mortgage, for example. If you have in your mind some sort of like narrative or something that you find entertaining about it while you're paying your mortgage, like, it's not like your mortgage company sends it back and says, like, you're defaulting on your loan because you weren't serious enough when you mailed it out to us or whatever, right? And I actually played around with this a lot during COVID, because wearing a mask, I'll just put it out here. Wearing a mask, I walked around like Donald Trump when nobody knew that I was doing it for days on end. I would be in a supermarket, and under my mask, I'd be like this. And then I would say, thank you very much. Thank you. Appreciate it. And nobody knew I was doing it. And I was struggling a lot during COVID, like we all were. For me, socially, I was struggling a lot because I really just wanted to get back together with people and I wanted to hang out. And, you know, feeling like I was a victim of the situation, led me to this experiment, which was like, maybe I'm not as much a victim of the situation as I feel. And maybe I can play around in my mind. And I don't lose anything. I didn't break any rules. I didn't get any trouble. I still went to the supermarket. I followed the direction of the arrows that it told me to walk, because we all know that.
Now, when you stand in line, you do the sneeze and that's it.
Yes.
They're laughing.
Yes. No, my favorite thing was when you follow the arrow and the other person followed the arrow, but you were looking at a product on the shelf and you're breathing the same air through the shelf to each other. That was my favorite. No, actually, I'll tell you my real favorite. I went to American Dream Mall in December of 2020, and they had a kids ride that went around in a circle, and they skipped every other seat on a ride that went in a circle. Like, think about that. They're literally like taking you through the COVID air, like on a loop, but they were like, we got to skip every other seat because there's COVID-19. Please comply or you'll be asked to leave.
Kol HaLashon.
Sure.
I have my homework.
But just the idea of putting a smile on your face changes perspective.
Yes.
It changes whatever happens, whether it's, you know, chemicals, but when you're in a situation where you can't see your way out, if you can like, whether it's a morning b'tochni, you say, Hashem, where are you? And you give a smile and you're like, let's see how you're going to work this one out. And it changes the whole stuckness, the whole, not easy, but the idea.
Yeah. And I would add to that, I think Purim gives us a different way of looking at Hashem, where are you? Because I think we can look for Hashem, where are you in a very serious way, like, you know, in like a tefillah where we're like reaching out, like Hashem, where are you? And I mean, I'm no rabbi. That's pretty clear. But in my own mind, I could think about it when I find the humor that exists within the world. Think about Purim, right? You couldn't see the end of the story, but there were a lot of ridiculous things that were happening. Uh-huh. And so, like, you can be like, I'm looking for humor because I'm looking for Hashem. You hear what I'm saying? Right? So I'll tell you, this hit me. I don't know how many other people thought of this, maybe a lot, and maybe it was in a lot of people's drushes this week, but I found it very interesting that Trump made an executive order that we should speak English on Rosh Chodesh Adar. Did you guys notice that? Yeah? Some of you guys shaking your head. Right? That he sent out a decree about the language that should be spoken, which is a silly decree if you think about it, right? It's like, why is he even sending this out? And he's signed like a billion executive orders, and he signs this one on Rosh Chodesh Adar. And everyone's like, well, what is he even doing that for? It's literally what Ahasuerus did. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm like, all right, like there's Hashem. I don't know why, but it's there.
Let's see where this goes.
Right.
Hey, hi, Sarah. Hi. I think you kind of answered a lot of my questions already. By the way, the laptop there, I think she sounds like she likes irony, which is a very high level of humor, which is kind of my kind of humor also, irony, satire. But there is such a thing like, you know, people can accuse you of not being serious enough about life. I mean, there is obviously inappropriate humor. And certainly it's not like you're going to make jokes at a funeral, but you say to have a lighthearted look. I mean, I don't know where there's a balance too much levity or, maybe there's an inability, you know, it's like really becomes a defense, an unhealthy kind of defense mechanism. You're just trying to avoid, you know, the seriousness of it or, you know, I mean, I don't know where you would draw the line or where what would really be inappropriate. Humor way. When you really have to start looking at things seriously, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a tendency maybe to kind of be in denial about a lot. You know, it's easy to laugh off certain things, or you know, just to have a sense of humor. But at one point, does it become really, you know, too much of an unhealthy thing? Yeah, I don't necessarily mean laughing at sick things either. It's just, you know, I mean, I don't like sick humor, cruelty, anything like that.
Right.
But when you're looking at your situation, your debts, whatever, your situation in life, shouldn't you at some point be more, you know, maybe serious is the same as being focused?
Well, I actually think that's a very interesting point. Like, maybe that's a mistake that people make, is that serious and focused are the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, is it? I mean, you know, it sounds like
I think it'd be just as focused if you're in a good, happy mood.
Maybe even more.
It can make you seriously, you need to finish it, but it also make you very distracted, like very nervous and you can't think straight. It works both ways.
It works both ways, yeah. I mean, I find myself sometimes it'll be concentrating too much or getting anxious or depressed. Maybe either realizing the gravity of something or simply I just realized how ignorant I was before. I, you know, uh, you know, like, I can't believe I was such an idiot before that kind of a thing, you know.
See, but I find humor in that, and I hear the challenge in that. Like, it took me a while, and it's still sometimes I will look back on something and be like, oh, I was an idiot, right?
Yeah, I can't believe the way I acted or whatever.
Yeah, but sometimes.
But he's taking it in a joking way. He's going to make fun of himself and laugh, mm-hmm. not take it like, oh, I'm so angry that I made a mistake or this and that. You can say that the humor, we're thinking that the humor is like going to make it take away the seriousness of the gravity. It's not really, just different modality of how your brain is thinking it.
Yeah.
When I'm in like in a positive joking mood, I could accomplish a lot more with people and work wise as well. People think like it's more serious. I gotta do this. They're like typing the same word 5 times. I need another coffee. I have to be more focused. Another riddle, another one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think self-deprecating humor is important. Now I'm good at that. well, and then it can go too far, right? It can go too far where you're not respecting yourself in the process. Mm-hmm. You know, like, so if you think about the subject of the joke. So before I was talking about the number 4 and that being ridiculous. Now there is a tendency that we have to make fun of other people, right? And that could come from a very bad place. And honestly, yeah. I try to stay away from that.
Yeah, me too.
And you know, so making fun of other people can be very harmful, but then, you know, making fun of ourselves is different. Mm-hmm. So when we make fun of ourselves, like we can kind of appreciate how hard we're trying when we're making fun of ourselves, because we are contradictions. All of us are contradictions, and meaning to say that like we have things that we say we will never do, and then we have a rule, which an exception to the rule, which allows us to do that thing, right? I am a walking contradiction. I am the improv therapist. Yet earlier today, somebody was talking to me and saying, oh, should we put you on the flyer? What should it say? Improv therapist. But therapist sounds so blah and intense. And I was like, yeah, I know. Yeah. Right? It's confusing. Now, when we really accept the fact that we are confusing, so then, and that we're contradictory, so then we can grow without being stuck. Meaning, cause like, it's actually, let's put it like this. It's us moving away from perfectionism. Right? We're never going to be perfect. So somebody who has a rule in their house of like, I don't know, you have to take your shoes off when you come into the house, but then like eats cookies and crumbs fall over the floor, right? That's pretty funny if you think about it, right? And if you do that yourself, you can kind of be like, hey, I'm a little bit ridiculous here. Now, and I will take that a step further. I don't like making fun of other people, but when I have a very close friend, that we have a good trusting relationship, that we care about each other, I will joke around with them about their contradictions. Like, you know how you're like a red-blooded American who is like Trump and you smoke cigars and you don't eat meat?
Yeah. Like, what's up with that? Somebody like him, he's a character. He's really, you see, somebody who's really a character. I mean,
we're all characters.
Yeah.
So, I think that there's, To go back to your original question, there's an amount of seriousness that we have in our lives, and we need to not lose that seriousness in terms of like going off the deep end. But I think a lot of times we tend to take ourselves too seriously. And when we take ourselves too seriously, then like there's no room for, you know, the flexibility and the letting go of perfectionism. And we kind of like go towards the serious side more easily than we do to the fun, playful side and the joking side. And that's kind of like where I'm like, at least this time of year, even if in 2 weeks we shut it down, let's have fun now.
It's true.
Just the idea of, if you think for a moment, what would I be able to accomplish if I could just, you know, put on that pink hat, walk around with something silly and not care. Like you mentioned, you know, we live in a world that professionalism, you want to go out and make sales, you're talking to people, you got to be serious. Maybe not.
Right.
Because what are they going to think? They're going to think you're crazy. Why? They might enjoy it, you know. Be real, you know, talk, relate, relationships. It's just the perfection, the worry that we have that holds us back from so many different ideas. I just came across in sales, comedy in sales, which was like, in sales? How in the world? But no, it's just that be able to relate, to connect. And that's what sales are, making that connection, the relationship. But if we're scared, what are they going to think about me? And what if I make a mistake? There's so many things that hold us back. So it just stops us and we stay in our comfort zone.
I got to say, I started chuckling again. It just happened.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
Let's go to the next live question you're on.
Yeah.
You're so serious, Ashi. What's going on? You're so serious.
Let's honest. How are you?
I'm really envious of people that are always laughing. Like, I always wanted to be that person that's always laughing and so pleasant to be around. I'm not like that. And there are people that, you know, smile, some don't smile. You know, what is it that makes some people the type that are, you know, just always like, you know, laughing and so pleasant to be around, and then others that, you know, unless they find something funny, you know, they don't. They don't have that, you know, way.
That's a cool, I like that question. Let's say it like this first. Most of us are funnier than we realize.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the things that we do that are funny to other people, number one, we think that they're just very routine and regular because we've always been ourselves our entire lives. That's mm-hmm. number one. Number two is that we can't see our facial expressions in a moment.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something that I learned from doing improv comedy on stages. Sometimes I've done the same like character, the same kind of energy, but mm-hmm. I committed to it and my face ended up like doing something which made the audience laugh. And that was when I was kind of like, I don't actually know what makes me funny. And there's freedom in that because then you don't have to try that hard to be funny. You just exist. And when something starts to look like it's funny, so then you kind of roll with that energy. And so when people say like, oh, he's funny, but I'm not funny, I'm like, who are you though to say that? Like, you might be hilarious. Some of the funniest people I know are very soft-spoken and very non-expressive, like in an extreme way. They just say stuff that like in the moment, it makes us laugh. So what I'm saying is like, it could be that, you know, you kind of view it for yourself, like I'm not one of those people, but maybe other people view you that way and you don't know yet, or you never really allowed yourself to completely be that person because your assumption is this is who I am. I'm not funny and I'm not easygoing and I'm not pleasant to be around.
Right. I think I wasn't clear. I mean, what you're talking about is also very interesting. Is the person who's always like just, they're laughing like, oh, you know, good morning. And they're like, hee-hee. You know, it's more that, you know, person that it's just part of who they are. And they're like, you know, oh, you know, oh, here's a paper. Oh, thank you. You know, it's just that it's a certain type of person that just, you know, just is constantly laughing. That's, you know, what you talked about is also very interesting. You know, I mean, the people that are naturally just, you know, funny or, you know, coming, you know, have that natural humor, but you know, it's I guess it's a certain like happiness that people display. I know I worked with a woman like that and she was always very pleasant, very, you know, always, you know, just laughing, you know, you know, and then there, I wish I could be like that, but what made her the way she is and me, you know, not, you know, I mean, I'll never be her.
I don't think you have to, right. I don't think you have to be. Some people find that energy exhausting. It's just the way, you know, there's different types of people and some click and other ones don't. There's no like ultimate person who is the most personable person. right? Like, I'm a high energy person. Some people find me exhausting, right? Sometimes I find other high energy people exhausting because we're just feeding off of each other and we're like, an engine that's just, RPMs are just going too much, right? So it's a combination of the people putting them together. You reminded me when I was in yeshiva, there was a guy who used to wake up in the morning. And as we were like, 20 whatever years old, we were not great at getting up in the morning, but he was always cheery. And he would say, good morning. He would go over to everybody, good morning, good morning. And everyone would be like, could you stop saying good morning like that? Like, come on. And so he took a nap one day during lunch, and he got up for mincha, and it was like 2:40, and I hadn't napped. And I saw him coming out of his room groggy, and I ran over to him. And I was like, hey, good morning. Oh, man, he was not happy with me. But I was like, listen, you got to learn now at some point, you know. But I don't know that one energy is better than the other. I think it's really important for us to keep that in mind.
What made them like that? What was it their childhood, their upbringing? I mean, their parent, they saw it and therefore they became that. Like, what is it?
I'm not sure. I guess it would be a lot of factors. Sometimes it could even have to do with kind of like their physical makeup. I mean, there's so many factors that would contribute to that. And then there's sometimes people, they're kind of stuck in that mode. And for them, it's an unpleasant experience that they have to be so cheery all the time. And they're trying to figure out, like, how would I actually not go into this mode? Cause I'm exhausted myself. So,
But they would be a place to, take a challenge. Try it out. Try to do it for a week. Try to imitate your. Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
Do it every day. Push yourself and go.
Great.
There's only one problem with that. Everybody works remote, and there's one other person, and he's locked in his room. So I could do it to myself.
But, yeah.
It's not for them. Not for them. It's for you.
Oh, for me. Okay. Okay.
Let me know.
You're making me laugh.
There you go.
Okay, we'll do. Thank you.
Okay, let's see if this next live person is ready to go. Hold on. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Thank you.
Well, she muted herself. That was a really short question. I was like, wow.
I have a lot to say on this topic.
Yeah, we have a lot. Okay, no, sorry. Yeah, you got muted.
Am I unmuted now?
Yes.
Okay, thanks. So in a relationship, when one person is very serious and focused on the conversation, the other person could be very like, oh, this is too heavy. I just want light, and make light of it. How do you make peace with such a scenario?
Oh, this is for me. Yeah. How do you make peace with such a scenario? So thinking about it, that there are many different variables and versions of that scenario. So, really not available, not possible for us to really answer it across the board. But I think about the flexibility of humor. Right. So if you make a joke and your audience is not really receiving it, and in this case, let's say a spouse is not really receiving it, so you have to adjust your tactic, and sometimes you have to abandon the joke. And so, you might find that you have to try a few things before it actually starts to work, or you might find that, like, in this situation, like, all right, this person's not ready to joke around. Like, we do have to be that flexible. Sometimes there are people who are very funny, and they make jokes, and there's an implied demand that you laugh at their jokes. You know what I'm talking about? Like, those type of people that they're coming over to you with a joke, full head of steam, and you're like, I have to laugh because I don't know what else I'm going to do here. I'm kind of cornered. That type of person a lot of times doesn't realize that they're not actually being flexible in the relationship. They're kind of using the other person as an audience member. I will refer back to the improv comedy concept of yes and that we talked about in my first time around, which is the way that we are able to make up comedy on the spot, because that's what I do. And the idea of yes and is that you accept what the other person gives you and then you add something. Sometimes what the other person gives you is kind of like a scowl. So you kind of go with that energy. You know, it's not an answer to the question in every single situation, but I think it's important to know that we should be flexible when we're being funny. And if we're like demanding that other people listen to our joke and that like, I need this right now to blow off steam. Everybody needs to be funny. And it's probably not actually getting you to the healthy place that we're discussing here, because that's still you holding on to control of your entire environment, right? Which is the opposite of that type of humor that we're discussing. Are you muted or are you thinking? Oh, no.
He's got muted. Let me unmute. Hello?
Yes, okay. Actually, I'm the... Okay, so really, I'm trying to ask it the other way around. You answered for the person that's making the jokes. I'm talking about the serious person.
Yeah. Oh, okay. All right. Well, let's say like this, that again, there could be situations where it's very serious and, or, you know, you're not ready to make jokes. Fine. I would ask the question to you or to anybody in your position. Are you ever available for a joke? And I don't know if you are or if you aren't, but.
For sure.
Well, what? You are?
For sure.
Okay. So then I don't think there's anything wrong with being like, I'm not ready to joke. Right? Like let's make sure that we appreciate that if the other person is coming from a reasonable place with making a joke, that they didn't do anything wrong. Right? Meaning like if they weren't being insulting and it wasn't a situation where it was inappropriate to make a joke and you hadn't already told them several times, like, please don't joke around right now. Like all those things, like the person, like, it's just, you said something and they made a joke. Right? So it's okay to gently say like, I'm not ready to make jokes yet. You understand what I'm saying? Like, I think sometimes we feel like, how could you make a joke in a situation like this? And that's really where it's not necessary to hold on to it in such a harsh way. I have a joke with one of my clients. We say, how can you play harmonica at a time like this? And that's us saying how, you know, you can have so much going on in your life. That you could think, how could you even play a harmonica, right? But like, you can actually play a harmonica while you're walking to do something very serious. Like I mentioned in our first time around, I learned how to play harmonica while I was sitting in traffic on the Van Wyck, right? So when someone's making a joke, if you are like, how could you make a joke at a time like this in a very a harsh response, I would recommend you kind of look at why does it need to be that harsh. At the same time, there's nothing wrong with saying like, hey, I'm not ready to joke about this. Or I'm not ready to make a joke right now. Or I'm not in a joking mood.
I hear you. Okay, thanks.
But it shouldn't happen every time.
Right, yeah.
Right. Then you realize you're like, you're not interested in their jokes. And then right. That's where the relationship goes.
Yeah, because we do need to make jokes, and the jokes don't need to be universally funny. They could be inside jokes where it's only funny between you guys. I once asked one of my clients, this was a good one. I asked him, do you and your wife, single, older couple, never had kids, not Jewish. I was like, do you guys ever make jokes with each other? And he said, sometimes my wife wakes up and her hair looks like Albert Einstein. Like it's like white and it's like straight out and we joke around about it. And I'm like, that's great. Take that energy and consider finding it in other areas between the two of you, right? That it's a unifying kind of joke because he's not saying, hey, you look like Albert Einstein. And she's like, stop calling me Albert Einstein. She's like, I do look like Albert Einstein, right? So just let's think about that energy and where that might come up in other areas and then, you know, try to maximize that when the time is right.
Here's an interesting one. I'm the person that walks around walks around in shul, makes people laugh. But deep down, I'm hurting. This is the way for me to just shrug everything up, shrug it off. So the question is this healing? How do I know if it's just an escape or maybe it's, you know, when is it called healing or when is it called an escape?
Yehuda Alba Cassis.
What? Um, Well, look, we can say moderation in all things. And if you find that you can't moderate something, then it could be problematic. And it almost doesn't even matter what that thing is. So if it's humor all the time, like, I am a very serious person.
You are?
You don't believe me? You're surprised? I'm a very serious person. I don't know what I don't know what energy I give off.
When?
All the time. Yes. I'm a very, no, not all the time. I joke around, right? But I'm a very serious person. And I'm okay with that, right? Like my whole life, people told me I was intense. And for many years, I was like, well, I gotta be less intense. And what I realized is I don't have to be less intense. I just have to be intense at the right times. So like, for example, there's a saying in the comedy world that stand-up comedians make their money during the day, they just collect it at night. And what that means is they work really hard to write their material. But then they go, they deliver whatever short amount of time they go up there and give their comedy set. And then they get paid for that set. During the day, when I'm writing comedy, I am very serious. Like, I am working hard, I'm analyzing, and I'm thinking, and if you would interrupt me, I might be like, get out of here, I'm making jokes!
good.
Right? So if this person, let's say he's walking around shul, and he can't ever turn it off, he always needs to make jokes all the time, so then, it's not that jokes are bad, or unhealthy, it's not that the humor is unhealthy, it's just that it's out of balance. Right? It would be the same thing that I'm saying about being overly serious. If somebody was like, the seriousness is bad, I don't know that it's bad. It's just, is there a time where you're okay not being that thing?
So you're talking about seriousness, very serious. Now the question is, if somebody is really in pain.
Yeah.
And there's no way in their situation that they can even smile. So maybe this is not for them. Maybe they just have to.
Well, I want to add another kind of wrinkle to this here, is that many times what comedy is speaking truth out loud. So I think I mentioned this first time around in the book, The New Comedy Bible by Judy Carter. She writes, the biggest compliment you can get as a comedian is hearing somebody in your audience say, oh my gosh, that's so true. And most of the time, really what comedy is we're saying the truth out loud. And there's relief in that. And there's a release of tension in that. And so when somebody's going through a horrible situation, so you don't necessarily need to make a joke, but I think that mechanism is still important. Meaning that same process is still important. So what I mean by that is, because I've had this in my own life and I've had this with other people that have been going through stuff. If I'm the one for them that they can sit and be like, just say how horrible everything is, and they don't hold back, and you know, I call them and I say, what's up, and they say bunch of swear words. I don't have my beep button here, but you know what I'm saying. They say a bunch of swear words, and I can handle that. That's them saying the truth out loud. So we don't necessarily need a laugh. We need the relief of the release of tension. And so for somebody who's going through really, really horrible stuff, do they have somebody that is emotionally strong enough and that they trust enough to be able to be like, this is the real, honest, raw truth about how messed up everything is? And the other person goes, yeah, man, I hear you. Right? That is, in my mind, that's a form of humor. And that's why in the recovery world and in a lot of the trauma groups that I've worked with, you hear a lot of dark humor, and the dark humor to somebody on the outside would be like, what in the world are these people saying right now? They're making jokes about things you should not joke about. But when you're in there, you know, you need to release this tension. And when you're in a group of safe people that you can be honest about how messed up things are or how messed up things got with no filter, there's a lot of comfort in that. And sometimes it ends with laughter. Sometimes it doesn't end with laughter, but it might accomplish the same thing.
Well, I think we should spend a moment of a moment of laughter for those who haven't laughed in a while.
Yeah.
Or for those who it's hard for them. And now we can create some space, give them that okay to just put on a smile on their face. Can we do that?
Help us.
We don't know how. Tell us how. You want to do the, you have any other improv or any other ways how we can?
What are we, are we doing silence or laughter? I got confused.
No, laughter, not silence. There's enough silence.
I don't do silence very well. I don't know if you picked up on that. It's not my area of expertise.
We'll be in a room. We do, what's it called? Eye gazing. And then the laughter comes out.
Yes. Yes.
But, here on Zoom, it might be a little harder.
Yeah. It's a little bit difficult. It's a little bit difficult. I'll tell you something that a friend of, we kind of uncovered this week. This is just joking around a little bit, just randomness. But we were talking about that meeting with Trump and Zelensky and J.D. Vance. And my friend was like, you know, J.D. Vance has this weird energy to him. He's like a Karen who had like two mimosas, who's like shaming you for not thanking your dad. Like, excuse me, did you say thank you to your father? Did you say thank you? Do you know how hard he works? And then like Trump kind of comes back in where he's like, it's all right, honey. That's fine. But he is right. She is right. You didn't say thank you. Your father works very hard every day. You should say thank you. You said thank you, but you didn't say it nice enough. Yeah, we were doing that for like an hour on Shabbos. It was great.
You literally have material every Shabbos. Like you just watch the news, you know?
You should know, by the way, the last time I was on with you guys, I got a phone call from somebody who, he left me a voicemail and he said, hello, I don't know if this is a Yehuda Alchemist from the Coach Menachem show or not. I just want to tell you that you did a great Trump impression and they did not acknowledge it. And I want to let you know it was great. I was like, thank you so much.
We have these guys. We send them.
we have to keep our entertainers, you know, feeling good.
Worked.
Got me. Okay, let's put on the next live one. Here we go. Hi. How are you?
Hi. Okay. Two comments, three questions. First, I think when you talked about being intense, I think laughter and crying are so intertwined. You can catch yourself and others, especially like on Purim, you'll watch this, you can be laughing and very, very close to crying, mm-hmm. and vice versa. You can be crying and all of a sudden it becomes a laugh. It's a very interesting phenomenon. That's a comment. Maybe you could comment further in a minute.
Okay, can I jump on that before we get to the next nine?
Yes, jump.
The
you know. She has a journal like in front of her, like she's ready to go.
Yeah, no, I'm good with all of them. I just want to do them one at a time. No, it's wild that they are kind of so close together, but they're so different. Last year there was a guy on Purim who he's every year he's the best drunk. He's awesome. And he got this thing in his head that he needed a pickle because pickles were to make him not hungover. And he was walking around like all down about this pickle. He's like, I need a pickle. And he's like 6'3" and he's just awesome. He's like, I need a pickle. I'm going to be hungover tomorrow. And then he sat down next to me. I had my guitar. I started making up a song about how this guy needs a pickle. And all these teenagers started singing the song with me about all I want is a pickle, all I want is a pickle, right? Fine. I see him like 10 minutes later. He's like happy. He's like, I ordered a jar of pickles through Uber Eats. I figured it out. All right. This guy's hammered. 10 minutes later, he's devastated. He's like, I ordered it to my house. I just paid $50 for a jar of pickles. He was all devastated again. Then I go do a bunch of other things and I come back in to the Suda. And the music's playing and he's dancing in the middle of the circle with a giant jar of pickles that he found. Like it's a Sefer Torah on Sefer Torah. Right? Like he was on an emotional roller coaster. It was amazing. That was just an anecdote from last Purim, which was amazing. I'll tell you this. I don't know the significance of this, but somebody pointed this out to me, many years ago. The tune that we sing for Eicha is the same tune that we sing for Atah Reisa with one note difference.
Yeah. That Eicha and Atah Reisa to the same negative.
Yeah, it's the exact same, except and one goes down at the end.
Right.
right? Yerushalayim, right? So it's really, in my mind, the way I understand it is that the emotional spectrum is complex. And once we enter into the emotional, the extreme emotional, you know, spectrum, we're available to feel all of them. Right? So it's like now, like we're in. And so maybe it could move quickly once we're in there. Maybe sometimes it doesn't, but the idea here is that like laughter is important because it allows us to go into our emotions. And if we cut off laughter, the chances are we probably have cut off the whole door to that level of emotionality. And that's why, yeah. One of the reasons why a lot of speeches start with a joke, is because they want you to be emotionally open, right? And so you're emotionally open. And then when I tell you a sad story, and then when I give you a call to action at the end, and that's why we should give more tzedakah or this or that, like you're available for that. Right? So it is very close together, but I think it's just because it's all intense emotion and it's all packed into the same area. Once we go in there, who knows what's going to happen?
Right. I think along the same lines that if you really want to know who you are and who somebody else is, I always say, look at what you laugh about and look at what you cry about. It mm-hmm. really will tell you who you are. Yeah. And I'm that person who is the first to cry and the first to laugh. And the last to stop crying and the last to stop laughing. So like, it's just intense all, like everywhere. Okay, here's my questions. The first thing is there a genetic component to humor? I find myself laughing about things that one of my parents would laugh about and his mother would laugh about. Like it's like this like thread we laugh about and we're sitting there laughing and everyone else is looking at us like, what is so funny? Like in the same family. But we right. are going at it and we can't stop. And they're like, they don't get it. So is there a genetic component? And also, what is the definition of humor? And what makes a laugh contagious? Those are your three questions. Go jump.
All right. We got it. I don't know enough about genetics, but I will say that there is a social learning component to, you know, to humor. The things that you're around, which are funny when you're younger, in your home is the same way we learn values. It's the same way we learn emotional expressions and, you know, rules of the home and, right? There's a lot that happens in the home which says how we express our humor side and when we hold it back. You know, I think about how, you know, every home is really a little country with a culture. And culture is defined as living in a place where there's unwritten rules that everyone follows. That's what culture really is. Sometimes the rules are written, but at the end of the day, when you're part of a culture, you just don't do certain things and you do certain things a lot of times unconsciously just because that's you're kind of like habituated to it. In a home, what happens when somebody does a certain thing or says a certain thing and that kind of shapes our humor? Right? Do we laugh at certain things? Do we laugh at ourselves? Do we, you know, do we laugh when somebody trips? Do we not laugh when somebody, like all those kind of things are part of our development of humor. Now I will tell you that one of the things that I'm the most grateful for in my life is the fact that my mother insisted that we have humor in the home. She insisted that we watch TV shows. I'm saying TV shows. Yeah. The amount of she had one. Now I could say it because it's like after, it's like all the people after Biden who were saying like, oh, it turns out he was right. Okay. So now it's after the fact. Okay. So we had a television. Okay. Please, whatever. But she insisted that we watch comedy and she had a Friday night blessing that she would give us. That was you should be happy, healthy, wise and have a good sense of humor. And that is one of the biggest gifts. And I think about it all the time now that I'm completely, you know, out as an improviser and a comedian. And I'm like, well, there's a reason why I've done this. It's because I was taught this, right? And so I think that's an important part of what we teach our kids in our home about humor. If we don't value it or we don't express it, then they won't have it. And if we do, then they'll have it. And what do we choose to like focus on? And what do we skip? And what do we say we're not focusing on?
Right. Even, you know, even among siblings, you'll find some of them get it, right? I'm laughing with some of them and other ones are just sitting there clueless. It's like, what's wrong with you guys? And there's like, it's not funny. So even within the same culture, which isn't very interesting, right?
Yes. Yes, because everyone's different. Everyone has a different perspective. Me and my brothers all have different brands of humor. We all have humor, but we all have different brands of humor because we're all different. And it's actually pretty wild to look at. Yeah.
Okay, want to answer what the definition of humor is and what makes a laugh contagious?
So what defining humor, that one I'm going to leave to the researchers because I think for me I want to say kind of like we know what it is and, I don't know. I kind of want to leave that like we know what it is and we'll,
Is it when the unexpected happens? Is it when, you know, when people fall, you said that before, like there are really different things that tickle us, right?
Yes. Okay. So when you put it like that, let me say it like this. We laugh for many different reasons and there are many, many different styles of joking. But most of the time it comes from a surprise from what we were expecting, what our norm is. But that could be a million things. Right? Like, sometimes people, their comedy will be, standing on a stage and saying, I'm so nervous to be here that I don't even know what to say. And they do that for 10 minutes and people are laughing the entire time. It's because you expected him to say something at some point, right? And sometimes someone will be on a stage and they'll be firing off jokes the entire time, each one with a turn to make you laugh with something unexpected. And so there's such a wide range of it, right? Puns. You're using a word which is normally used one way in a different way. There's a British guy who's on Instagram and social media. I don't know if anybody has ever seen it, but like he's this really tall guy who goes over to people and he says, "Do you like puns?" And they're like, "Yeah." He's like, "Would you like a pun right now?" And then he says, they tell him a word and then he makes up a pun for them on the spot. Like some people love that stuff. And it's just the unexpected way of using the word. Now I'll say this about contagious laughter. Contagious laughter comes from when we are sharing an experience together. So meaning contagious laughter won't happen if one person is making fun of someone else and putting them down. We're sharing an experience together. So we like agree on this, like that we're here together and emotionally, and you are emotionally open to the other person influencing your emotions, right? Because we do this where we're like, I'm not laughing at that. That is not funny. Like it's funny when people have to say, no, I don't find that funny.
Right.
Well, you probably do on some level because you're trying to tell us that you don't. Right. So it's like we're blocking it. And when we block it, so then it won't be contagious. But if we're emotionally open to it, so then when someone else is laughing and we're sharing the experience, we're kind of like, yeah, it is kind of funny. And then you're like, well, you find it really funny. And then it starts to work on us and it's like a meditation and then you're really in it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Hey, Yehuda. Let's go to the next slide. Well, let's see.
I love how this podcast goes on for days.
Like, it's never ending. Like, we don't respect people's sleep or anything.
No, it's just whatever. It's cool.
Hi, how are you?
Hi. First of all, your show is, I feel like I'm at a comedy show, so thank you.
Awesome.
I definitely find
anybody
humor.
Anybody want something to eat? Drink, huh?
Yeah, popcorn. I definitely find humor, in most of my challenges, I would say. My motto is better laugh it off than cry. So that got me, you know. The question is, like, I think my humor is more like a teasing type of humor. Mm. The question is, when do I pick up a cue that people don't get it?
Yeah, that's a really good one. That's a really, really good one. A friend of mine once told me, she makes a lot of self-deprecating jokes. And she told me that when she was in high school, she used to make fun of other people and her comedy timing is great and she's hilarious. And at a certain point, she saw the pain that it was causing other people. So she just flipped it on herself. And to the point where I think maybe sometimes she would take it too far, like maybe she was making fun of herself the way that she made fun of other people. But, you know, realizing that there is another way to go about being funny is, I think, really important. So like for her, realizing that I don't need to tease other people in order to be funny. So what else can I look at? And this could seem like really difficult because humor and being funny can sometimes be looked at as this magical thing, like some people have it and some people don't. And if you haven't studied it yourself, there's a certain, sometimes for some people, there's a certain amount of like, I don't know how this is going to go. Like I have no real structure in my mind of what makes a joke work. I just know I'm pretty good at it. Right. And so, it limits people when they think like, well, my style of humor is I make fun of other people and I'm kind of stuck with that. I think, you think about teasing other people and it could be really playful and really fun. And sometimes those are the funnest things with good friends. What else is there for you? Meaning if you already make jokes, what other types of jokes are there, right? Because there's observational humor about just the world, about society, about contradictions in the world. Sometimes it can be absurd, to the point where you just like take a premise and you kind of run with it. So I'll give you an example. The same friends we were talking about, J.D. Vance, we found it really funny that we had this father-son ice skating event at, for the school, and they put it in the school newspaper, and the title was Blades of Achtos. Now, I found that very funny because I'm like, I don't know what a blade of Achtos is. That's just something I found funny. Like, right? Like, what are these blades? Like, why is Achtos and blades go together? Like, there was so much Achtos, we were stabbing people with the Achtos. Like, we riffed on this for a long time, right? And so, we weren't really making fun of somebody specific. I don't know who wrote that. And we weren't like, oh, look how stupid this person is that put that in there. We're just kind of like, oh, there's a headline that's funny. And we riffed on that for a while. And so it's another area of humor. I would encourage, people who find themselves stuck in that like ripping on each other kind of banter, to look at other things that could be funny. Cause at the end of the day, most things that we find funny are observations. And then it's the way that we execute that joke, which could make it very focused on another person and shaming them. Or it could be, this is actually a unifying joke, right? So like somebody who's like, I never eat carbs unless it's for, I don't know, unless he's very strict about like eating a kazayas of challah and he has like the biggest shear and he eats like a massive piece of challah every single time at Friday night, right? So if he's available for a joke about that, you can take that character and that energy and that idea and bring it to something else and not be like, you know how ridiculous you are? You could be like, I do the same thing, right? And then you're building off of the energy that exists in his joke, but you're not like pointing at like, you are ridiculous. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Amazing, yeah. I like that.
Expand it. And this is, I'll tell you this, that one of the things which for me was like wild when I realized this was, that I was holding back so much in this part of my life that I thought that it was ridiculous to study comedy. I was like, no, why would you waste your time on that? And then I realized, if you want to do something well, study it, right? And I started studying comedy and I was like, oh, okay, so that's how you do that. Oh, okay, that's interesting. So you can make a different move here. Literally right before we got on this call, I was on somebody's YouTube live who is a comedy coach, and he takes people's bits and he gives them feedback on it. And I was just kind of watching him take this lady's material and, spin it this way, spin it that way. And he was taking pitches from people who were sending it in.
Can I just share something funny? Yeah. During COVID, I was in like a Michael's with one of my little kids, like he was five, and we weren't wearing masks, but we were 6 feet apart. And this like middle-aged, white guy made a face at us. So I didn't know what I was going to do. So then I said to her, but don't worry, you're wearing a mask. We laughed. I mean, she didn't really laugh, but we had a good laugh out of that. So it was
right. So it could be, you could be happy with that joke and like that moment. Yeah. You could be proud of that and you can kind of like write it in, your journal. Cause that's what I do. I make it today. I made a really good joke. But if it was somebody that you were like, I don't want to make that type of joke with them. This is a relationship that if so, you might not in an obsessive way, not in an anxious way, but you might think about that later and be like, how would I do that differently? Like, how would I play it out differently? Because this is what we do in the comedy world, is we go out and do material, and then we listen back to it, and then we analyze it, and we go, how could I take that joke in a different direction? Right? And sometimes you get the audience, people say this all the time, the audience is the most honest people, like, it's the most honest instant feedback you will ever get. If you make a joke that they like, they will laugh. If you don't, they won't. And sometimes you make a joke and they give you like a groan. And that groan is kind of like, I think I offended the audience a little bit. And you ask yourself, what did I say that offended the audience? And then sometimes you're like, oh, because I said that, and that's not such a nice thing to say, but if I just took out that word, or I changed that energy, right? Or I ended that joke by being like something like more unifying. So you change a word, and then you train yourself. Yeah.
I tend to do that a lot. Like, I'll do that, which is just some guy off the street, but it's not really funny. I found it was extremely funny, you know? So how would I change that? Let's see. Such a situation.
Well, I think the situation was one where you were getting kind of like a snarkiness, right? And so you wanted to come back with some snarkiness. Sometimes you can underreact to something and that's funny. Sometimes you can be dumb about something and be very confident. I always say, I think my opinion, there's nothing funnier than false confidence, unearned confidence. Like being so confident, like, it's fine because we're actually 6 feet away from each other and thank you for bringing it to my attention. Like that kind of thing, but not in a snarky way. Like your character that you're doing is one that's like, doesn't realize how dumb that they are. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Like,
okay. You know what I mean? And it can come off as sarcastic and you have to play these things. You have to test them out. Okay. But that there's
a moment could be
the kind of thing where you're like, you know, you're so grateful. I don't know. And it's all sounding sarcastic, but that's kind of how the stage was set, it seems.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Really. Wow.
Yehuda, now let me ask you a question as a therapist.
Oh boy.
There are many people that are shut down. Their emotions are shut down. You mentioned
that. Not as therapist cap now. Okay.
Yeah.
Joker cap. Go back to the therapist cap.
You mentioned it before. There are many people that are shut down emotionally. And whatever happened, whether trauma or something that happened in their life that they had to shut down, they decided to shut down, whatever it is. And they're listening here and they would love to laugh and they would love to be in that more jolly, but they just can't. So where do they start?
How do we get out of the depression? How do we get out of the negative state of mind? Yeah, back to that. Yeah. That's the bottom line. How do we get out of that? How do we push the happy button?
Push the happy button. Yeah. Everybody needs a place where they can go and they can feel like they belong there. Right? If you don't have that in your life, that's extremely painful. And when I say that you belong there, I mean the type of place where you feel like you can be yourself for the most part. Sometimes that's a trauma group. Sometimes that's a chess group. I think that for a lot of people, their pain is amplified by the fact that they're alone, right? Like people will say that pain, suffering is pain that you're alone with. That's when you're really suffering. And so in terms of like the jokingness, maybe the joking around doesn't come back right away, but I would say the first step being finding a group of people that you feel like you can be yourself around. And that question actually is a very, very tough question to answer, especially people with trauma, because they're not really connected to who they are. And they're kind of, they usually think about what does the rest of the world think I should do? And it's a journey, but I start with what are you passionate about? What is the thing that you would talk someone's ear off about that you would be excited about? And that you would talk to them and not realize that they're trying to inch away from you. Let's start there. Is that something that you're willing to experiment with? I think that when you go back into that type of space, even though it's not easy to find it and it won't necessarily instantly make you feel good, I think then you'll start laughing again because you're around other people and you're connected, and laughter really is a product of connectedness. And so it doesn't mean that the pain is resolved. It just means that I belong somewhere. And that's where I think AA groups, you know, like all 12-step meetings and those kind of things, like sometimes it's the beginning of healing, because it's like my life before this was, I was just alone in my pain. And now I'm with a group of people who are just as messed up as I am, and I'm no longer alone in my pain. And then some of the funniest stuff happens in those groups. People start to make jokes and they start to make fun of their pain a little bit. And that's them saying, oh, this pain isn't going to control me anymore. I can mock this pain because it used to be big and scary, but now it's something that doesn't control me. And we can joke about it in this safe setting.
It's finding a safe space. That's very important.
Yeah. And I like to think about safe space being much broader than therapy. Much, much broader than therapy. Right? My improv group, when I'm in improv group, I am in therapy. And that is not a universal therapy. I can't tell everybody to go to an improv group because that's going to be therapy. There are, whatever the thing is that lights you up, that makes you talk people's ear off, or I think about it like something that you used to do when you were younger, which really, if you think about it, you could still do in your life today, but you just stopped doing it. Is there a group of people that do that? Find that group and join that group.
When are you coming next?
Soon. And it's going to happen soon. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. The traveling therapist.
That's right.
But, you know, I mentioned many times just to tap into your emotions. Your emotions are shut down for a reason. You know, you don't want to go to places because it could hurt. You don't, you know, from past experience. But just by starting small, saying, you know, this I like, this I don't.
Mm-hmm.
This I feel, you know, I enjoy this. This I didn't. You know, it's just tapping into those feelings slowly, allowing slowly to get back into that space, you know. For many people, they would need help to do that.
Oh, you know, absolutely. It's sometimes it's a very lengthy searching process, and it can be very frustrating. But in my mind, it's the beginning of the real healing from real pain, is going back to who I am independent of the social structures that are around me. Right? If this is something that you enjoy, why don't you do it in your life? And many times there's a judgment on it. Many times it's like, well, I don't know what other people would say, or it's not what people usually do, or this or that. And you kind of have to work through some of that, at least to the point where you could take a chance on it. And then you start repeating it. And once you have those experiences where you're like, I do this thing and I like it and I don't need to justify it to anyone else, and it's a part of me that I used to have before things got really rough, and I'm feeding it, and I'm not saying that I don't have pain now and the things are not rough now, but I'm having this experience where I'm feeding this part of myself which has gotten neglected because of my trauma. It feels different and it opens a new door. And for me, improv was the first one, was the second one. Tennis was the first one. And I started playing tennis at the beginning of pickleball taking over tennis. And tennis is not very popular right now. But I would play tennis every single day for the rest of my life if I could, even if it meant that I had to sign somewhere that I will never tell anybody that I ever played tennis ever again. Meaning that if it was a complete secret and I would never get any social benefit from it, I would do it every single day. I would go to a secret location, play tennis, feel good, and then go back to doing the rest of my life. And that was something that I needed to recover from years of not really connecting to those parts of myself. Too much therapy. What is this?
Okay, so going back to just laughing, some people feel that if they just start laughing, it's not real. It's just fake.
Yes.
Why just, you know, pretend? They're real people. They're serious people. They're not just any use of just smiling and laughing, even though it's not real.
I would say there's probably some use to it. I know a lot of people their first time laughing in many years will be from, let's say, laughing yoga, from that kind of thing, where it's just, you just laugh and you get that infectious laughter, right? I've never actually done it myself.
You laugh for no reason?
Yeah, laughing yoga. Have you discussed that? Have you had a laughing yoga expert on yet or no?
No.
So I've actually never done it. I've never had an opportunity to do it, but it's incremental, small bits of laughter in a group that eventually turns into infectious belly laughing. And you can imagine that, like, everybody kind of, like, chuckle, like, everybody go, ha. And then somebody, like, kind of lets out a nervous laughter, and then it's kind of like, well, this is kind of funny, it is kind of silly, right? And it's just incrementally building, and then at a certain point, it's off to the races on its own. That type of experience, for some people, it's like, wow, I forgot about this type of laughter. For other people, it could be confusing for them, because they're not that emotionally open. And I warn people with some of these more like, I don't know what the right, where it's like dive all the way into the extreme emotion, like ecstatic dance and things like that. Some people it's excellent. Breath work, some people it's excellent. There are a lot of people who have experienced a lot of trauma and they are emotionally overregulating themselves at all times. And to, in 45 minutes, become so unregulated, they panic. And either they panic in the actual session or they panic afterwards because they're like, I need to stay in control of my emotions and I just let it go to this extreme. And so for some people, going and doing like laughter yoga or something like that, ecstatic dance, is amazing because they're opening up a part of themselves they forgot about. Other people, we need to go slower with them and we just need to be like, okay, let's chuckle one time and then we'll go back to being whatever we, you know. And you feel that experience. It didn't destroy me. It wasn't amazing. It didn't solve my problems. Okay, I'll do it again. Tomorrow, whatever. You know what I'm saying? You see what I'm saying? Like I think it's always incremental. You know, even if you're going to go all extreme and you're going to go into like breath work and do some screaming and some things like that and whatever, it's still incremental because all you, in my opinion, what you get out of that is a reference point. You're like, oh, that's where I could go. But how do you do that in your daily life? Like, you're not going to do breath work at the office. I hope not. You're not just going to be like, oh.
Okay, so what's some role play we can do?
Let's do it. Let's play somebody else on. Hold on.
Oh.
What do we got?
Hey, let's see. I don't know. Find out. Hi.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm actually feeling very slow. Yeah, I'm actually. One minute. I'm actually feeling very nervous to say what I have to say, but I think it can be really, really helpful. So, I'm very humorous a lot of times, but I'm very serious when I'm not. But I use humor to help me. I had an example last night and it was like something I think very brilliant. We were away for Shabbos to a different area and we came home by bus, city bus, and we checked when there's a bus. And so my husband said there's a bus in 5 minutes. And another one in 35 minutes. And he said, you know what? Let's catch the bus. Let's get the 5 minute bus. And we were running like crazy because we wanted to get the bus. And my wound is to feel used very easily. And I started getting like feeling like very like feeling like hurt and wounded and blowing. And we got to the bus. I sat down on the bus and I was thinking, yeah, like what? I'm a shmata. And then I was trying to reframe it. I was thinking, you know what? Okay, so my husband, first of all, he didn't mean anything. He really didn't. I would have expected him. I wanted him to ask me if I want to make this bus, but I didn't get a chance to. So I was thinking, okay, you know, he's the king. I'm the queen. And, you know, I'm running like with my oversized jewelry and oversized heels. I'm not in a funny mode now, so I can't say it in a funny way, but it really, 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 really helped me. And I do it a lot. It really, really helps. And another thing, we were waiting quite a few years to become grandparents. Baruch Hashem, we had our first grandchild.
You know, this comedy is good. You realize, right?
Oh, I love it. I love it. My brain went in 500 directions with that whole story there. Of running to the bus and then, you know, the oversized. When you have anything oversized, I'm in. You have oversized jewelry, oversized heels, right?
And it was in the snow, like really.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. In the snow, make it even better.
In Florida.
What is it? In Florida, right. Right. No, I highly recommend this. If your brain can do that, like trying to turn it into a comedy skit, it's really just reframing your perspective on the situation. And sometimes that allows you to regulate enough to get through it. I've done this in meetings where I was like, this is a meeting that is, I think is a lot of garbage is being said in this meeting. And I wrote out a comedy skit of what's happening in the meeting, because there are components in human life, in daily life, which are funny, and comedy is really zooming in on one of them and then just really taking it to the extreme, taking it to the max. Yeah. So, in sketch comedy writing, so sketch comedy being 5-minute comedy, you know, short sketches with really, with one main premise, a lot of sketch comedy writers will say that every scene has a game. And what they say with game is a game between the people, and really it's like a pattern. And most of the time, the game is a pattern that starts over here, like starts on a regular level, and then it just escalates and gets more and more and more ridiculous, right? And so think about any situation that you're in that is like, it's stressful. Imagine you were turning that into a 5-minute sketch where it had one concept of the human relating or the situation, and then that was going to get more and more and more ridiculous to the point where it reaches a peak where it's like, this is the most, nothing more ridiculous can happen. And then usually at that point in the sketch comedy writing, there's like one line which kind of like sums up everything. And that's like, that's a beautiful sketch, right? So you and your husband running to get to the bus and it getting more and more ridiculous as you go, right? Mm-hmm. And then let's say you sit down in your seat, you know, one of your heels is broken, you're covered in snow, and he looks at you and he goes, we probably just should have just waited for the one in 35 minutes from now. Like that's the end of the sketch, right? Like that's funny. That's fun. And if you do that in your head, it can move you out of the trauma space of like, I'm just a this and I'm just a that. Da, da, da. Even if you're going to go talk to your therapist about that the next day of like, this is the situation and this is what he did and this is how I felt, right? Like in the moment, why not make it into a fun story, regulate through that, write it down if you want and, mm-hmm. you know, and enjoy it and then deal with it later. That's like the example. That's the idea of we're serious, but if we're too serious, then, you know, what does that do for us? Just keeps us stuck.
Yeah. Can I ask something?
Yeah.
So also, like sometimes I do it when I'm in a situation where, like I'm powerless. Let's say I have a lot of work to do in my teeth, like $20,000 worth of work, and I can't afford it, and I'm missing more teeth than I maybe should be missing according to my age. And me and my husband were waiting a couple of years to become grandparents. And I was joking, you know, because we always have different this and that and boo-boos and kvetching. And I was saying, so we don't need the grandchildren to make us grandparents. We're Bobby and Zombie. I'm missing so many teeth. You know, that's it. Yeah.
Great. That's great. I think that's great. Because what your situation is still your situation. So it's like sometimes we're in a situation where it's like the situation is not changing. So can I at least enjoy the situation?
Yeah.
Right? Can I just have some fun with it? Because not having fun is not changing the situation, right? So if you can make that joke and you're good with that, like more power to you. Like have fun and while you're still trying to solve the problem that you're in. Yes.
I don't do it to other people. So I really don't, never.
Right. And doing it to other people is a lot of times it's not appropriate. Right. A lot of times it's not appropriate. And that's a mistake that some people make. And sometimes we learn from that mistake. I wanted to make sure that I said this tonight is that, you know, we take risks whenever we're making a joke. And if it doesn't go well, just apologize. Like that's the end of it. Be like, hey, I made that joke earlier. I think it might have been a little insensitive. I'm really sorry. Right? Like we don't have to hold back all of our humor because there's a possibility that we might make a joke which might offend somebody somewhere on the planet. Like you do your best and sometimes it doesn't work. And then if you're a good, honest person, you know, you go over to that person, you say, hey, I made that joke. I don't think it was very fair and fun, and I apologize about that. End of thing.
Okay. Let's take one more, then we'll do the Menachem wants to do a little role play. Let's have a little good time, okay? Let's take this one. Let's go, Mr. Coolier. What do you want to tell us, Mr. Coolier? Unmute. You got to unmute. Unmute button.
Okay. Hello?
Hello.
Yeah.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, hi. I want to thank the host and the guest, just tremendous. I wish you came on every single night, every single week. We need you. We need you desperately. Anyway, especially in the world we're living in. So I always like to tell people that I wish them have an adorable adore. Adorable.
There we go. There we go.
So I'm going to be punishing everybody tonight.
Get it?
Can I punish everybody?
Rather.
I want to punish everybody. Punish. Punish. Okay. So Haman, we're doing this about Purim. Haman ended up with more to cry. Mordechai, more to cry.
That's good.
Okay. I like Purim lots.
Lots.
Three. Was that a poor one? I don't think people laugh at him. Sorry. Haman felt like a heel in Shushan Habira. Okay. Let's get some good ones. Okay. I just adore Purim. Adore Purim. I get you better ones here. Because it's Purim. Because, right? So I'll tell you another word. I told this to Rabbi David Feinstein years ago. You see, there's a halacha that says you're supposed to learn Hilchas Purim, Hilchas Pesach on Purim. But who has time to learn Hilchas Pesach on Purim? You're so busy. So I said, here's an answer. You know, by drinking Arba Kaisis on Purim, so you mekayim the mitzvah of learning Hilchas Pesach. So I told him that. He said to me, yeah, Arba Kaisis. You know how we used to say the word Kais. K-C-A-S-E-S. Four cases of wine on Pesach. On Purim. Yeah. Like that one. All right. Let's see. I got a whole bunch more, but I don't want to hold you up because other people want to ask questions, but. Anyway, I thought I'd share some of that with you. If you want more, I don't know. Yeah, whatever the host said, whatever the... I'm sorry?
We'll have to send it by your email. Send
Email us the stuff. We're going to email it to everybody.
Oh, really?
I appreciate you sharing. I really do, because it's actually something on my list is that I wanted to say tonight that you use your humor on Purim. Whatever it is, however it is, use it, because this is the time to use it. And anybody who doesn't accept it, like, whatever. Maybe that's their issue. Maybe it's not their issue. Most people won't remember it because in general, people don't remember these things, but people drink, they don't remember it. But it's the energy that we bring. And that's the thing that I really learned from improv is like, just let people be and make a joke. You don't lose anything by being gracious with your laughter. There's people who hold back their laughter in a way of like, as if they're, you know, I'm not going to use my laughter on this joke. I have to save it for another joke. No, you're not, like, just laugh. People are just hanging out and you don't lose anything by laughing and have a good time. And I really appreciate your expression and adding to what we're trying to accomplish here, which is let's just have fun and say things that we think are enjoyable and share them with other people. Cause that's what this holiday is. Thank you.
Last time we did yes and. Is there any other technique that we can try?
I didn't prepare anything. And you're an improviser. What do you have in mind here?
Improv.
You got to give me a second here. Maybe
okay. He's like that bulb of light thing in his head, you know, with that bulb.
All right, let's say like this. Did we do angry compliments last time?
No.
Oh man, anger compliments is my favorite. It's pretty straightforward. You say something nice about the other person, but you say it like you're really angry.
Yehuda.
Yes.
It's so funny.
There we go. I want to tell you both. I really appreciate how you have me on the show. And how you spread positive energy. Coach.
He's lost.
Your hat looks great.
I'll tell you why we do this. We do this because it allows us to start being backwards.
What it does is it takes our brain and it splits two cliffs. The anger.
Yeah, it messes with your head.
Messes with your brain.
So we do this as a warm-up exercise before we go on stage or before we start an improv class. And we have a whole group, sometimes a large circle, yelling compliments at each other. And I'm very strict that people have to really get angry. Because if you're not really angry, then it sounds kind of sarcastic and it sounds like you don't mean it. Like we need you to commit to the height of it so that it can be ridiculous so that we know that you actually mean it. Right? So I'll say, I absolutely love how supportive you are and how whenever I call, you're available and you're just so helpful. You got to go all in on it. If you don't go all in on it, then it doesn't really work. And it starts making us work backwards. And, you know, that's how we loosen up for improv and we have a good time and maybe do that, at your perm suit. I don't know.
Wow. Love it.
If people send me videos of them doing angry compliments at their perm suit, I will be happy for the next 5 years.
Long commitment. Okay, let's go to the closing segment. Shkoyach, Rabbi Yehuda, for coming on tonight and giving tremendous chizik and geschmack on a uncomfortable, weird topic that people just don't know where to put it and how to deal with it. It's like, it's the weird elephant in the room, like laughter and happy and like, it just doesn't work always. So thanks for coming on and Hashem, hopefully we'll have a lot more happy times together and geschmack. And I think the point of tonight, what we're trying to really take out is how to really enjoy life. Again, every Sunday at 9 o'clock, we have different topics for Rabbanim and Hashem. Next week, March 9th, we're going to have Matthew Miller. The topic is navigating the challenges of personality disorders. Support for family members and spouses. I don't know if this was a laugh, cry, should I say it angry? Navigating the challenges of personality disorders. Support for family members and spouses. It should be powerful and meaningful. Please join us and let people know about it. Everything is recorded. Show us on NachumBerfel.com. You can email coachfornachum@gmail.com. Tonight's show is 223. And if you want to listen on the phones, it's 732-305-9011. If anyone would like to get a hold of Yehuda. Yehuda, what's your cell phone number?
646-404.
I'm joking. Okay, you want to put it
out? What? I told it last time.
Okay, everybody.
No, because your audience does WhatsApp. That's what it's for.
Okay, 646.
All right, 646-404-2878. If anybody's working on any perm material and they want to consult with me, send me a voice note and I'll respond to my pitches. Maybe you'll like it, maybe you won't. But send me a voice note. I like voice notes. Apparently Jews like voice notes. That's what my partner used to tell me. My business partner used to say, you Jews love voice notes. Like,
you don't have to type. You have to spell.
I don't know. Anyways.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you to all
and the improv therapist, theimprovtherapist.com, the improv therapist on Instagram and YouTube, the improv therapist. Search the improv therapist.
Okay, let's go to the closing segment. I'll go first, Menachem, and then Yehuda will leave you for the final improv of the night. Just want to say, in my opinion, like, laughter is something I love to tap into. I enjoy having a good time. Yes, there runs the risk of sometimes saying something that's a little bit embarrassing. Sometimes I actually enjoy that part a little bit myself. And sometimes you do run the risk of saying something you shouldn't have said, and sometimes you do offend somebody. It doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. It means that that's just a risk, right? That's enjoyable. People do love people that are, I mean, everybody quoted and I really said the same thing, but you could recap it how you want, but people do love people that have a positive vibe and a positive energy. It doesn't mean you have to be a joker, that you have to have comedy. And I realize so many comedians, if you think about this, don't even have such good material.
That's right.
Really the persona of the person and his character that gives off a feeling. So a lot of people prepare amazing jokes, but they really stink at delivery. A lot of guys, the jokes are sometimes a little stupid. Like I said, I'm thinking of the joke and he's like super funny, but he didn't really say anything. So it's really more of a persona of what you give off. And I believe very strongly that your energy really manifests something, whether you believe in manifestation or not, which we spoke about, it does give off energy. And me, I like to be around people that are positive, people that give off good vibes and people that are funny and they take, everybody's suffering and everybody's dealing with stress of life and all the problems of what's going to be and Trump and the tariffs, every single person, you know, guy works in a business, like busy with the tariffs or he's busy with Trump and Ukraine, like it's not changing, you know, but like, oh, I have to be nervous today because Trump, like it doesn't really affect your day to day life, but you have to like sort of go into that mode of positivity and like get a good aura of like happiness and good. And you go into the grocery store, you see somebody, you make a joke with them, give them a joke doesn't mean a joke that you're, I mean, joke means like a persona of like, relax, take it easy, positivity. People love that. It creates this like magnetic thing that people want to be around you. Like, I just want to be with Yehuda all day. Like, who wouldn't want to go out now and just go have dinner with Yehuda, spend the Shabbos with him, just have a great time with him, right? Even though his material is pretty weak, right? And even though it's a little corny and whatever, but the it's like you walk into Starbucks, that smell, it just feels good, it smells good. So we need to like tap into ourselves.
Sorry about that.
Menachem just muted me. Was I that bad?
Yes, it was improv.
So he's saying like I should just like, yeah. So the point is we need to work on it. It's not something that's really, I think it's today's generation. It's just like, we're like a little bit like it to be like negative, like either like positivity is like more like, I don't know, like just being like happy-go-lucky, like it just doesn't seem like it's right now the hot mode. So I think we need to work on it consciously, and I think we have to try. And I know the anxiety comes up and the stress and this, but when we tap into this positivity and happiness, it can really open up doors of success, doors of bracha, doors of happiness, doors of friends. I think it brings down a lot of bracha in the world. It also means you really believe in God, because there's no reason to be negative and to be fearful and to be negative. There's nowhere in the Torah it says to be like this negative, pessimistic person or screaming at people. The Torah wants you to be happy internally, and it's something we need to work on today, and we need to tap into it. And that's all I have to say. And I wish you a wonderful Purim and a wonderful year. And Coach Menachem Merfeld.
Amazing. First of all, Lasha, thank you for that. Thank you for the wrap-up. But I want to say is that we don't always have to be happy. And that what makes people very, you know, mixed. It's hard to be happy constantly. I want to be happy. I always want to be happy. It's okay. Part of the healing is to understand we have ups and downs. We have times that we like and times we don't. And that's okay. And that is part of tapping into our emotions, like we discussed. Many people are shut down for whatever reason. And part of the healing is to understand there's the ins and outs, and emotions is, there's no, you know, this I do want to feel and this I don't want to feel. You're just slowly learning how to feel. So it's, that's the healing part. But like what Yehuda said, you know, why can't we just be who you are? And hopefully it works out. Once in a while you make a mistake and that's okay. I think that's what we're all scared about, you know? I'd rather stay where I am, be quiet, so that I don't mess up. We're scared to mess up. So that needs some healing to be okay, yeah? To be able to go out there and, you know, be yourself, try, you know, be nice, smile, make a joke. Most of the time it works out. Sometimes you say, oops, I'm sorry. And then you don't think about it 24/7. Like, I can't. I'm just going to shut down. I'm not doing that again. It's okay. So that's something that we have to work on. But Yehuda, I really appreciate it. You did a great job tonight. And you weren't able to hear the laughter, but I can see it from the feedback. People were on the floor. You did a great job. Thank you very much. And Hashem should help. We should take Purim the way we're supposed to. Marvin B'Simcha doesn't say after Purim, you should take off whatever you marva, you continue. Until Mishnah is Av, a little bit less. So Hashem should help us all. We should be able to be ourselves. We should be able to heal and live a little bit lighter. Rely on Hashem. Mitzvah Hashem Shkoyach.
Thank you.
The final closing remark by Yehuda.
Well, thank you guys so much for having me again. You know, I not only just enjoy hanging out with you guys over, you know, on your podcast here, but this lifted me up on a whole nother level and getting connected to Purim and getting excited about Purim and what we're really trying to accomplish here. You know, I think about my younger self and, you know, that kid who didn't really fit the Jewish mold and, how this is, you guys are healing me. You guys are giving me opportunities, my younger self, an opportunity to not only maximize this time, but also spread it to other people. And I really greatly appreciate that. And my younger self greatly appreciates that. You know, Purim being the ultimate story of irony and the humor that exists in the Purim story is something that I hope we can walk away with, and we can think about it, that we can think about it when we're sitting and we're listening to the Megillah, that we are, you know, we're up to the third parak and we're thinking about, you know, whatever it is that we're thinking about and thinking about, no, like this is this part of the story, things were being laid into the story that were ridiculous, but had a purpose. And when we find the ridiculous things in our world and we connect to them being there, sometimes that's us being like, oh, well, there must be a plan for this. I don't know if I'll ever know what the plan was. I don't know when, if I do, I don't know when it will become clear to me, but there is an opportunity for us to see Hashem, I think, in the humor that exists in our world. And as we talked about, there's the risk of going too far or making litzanus or hurting someone's feelings. And I would encourage us to keep in mind that we have the opportunity and the ability to unite with humor and to use humor in this specific time and in our specific nation as a way of navigating the difficulty that exists within our world, within our families, within our communities. We have always been good at this. There's a reason why all the best comedians are Jewish. There's a reason why the Catskills was filled with Jewish comedians in the 50s and 60s. And you know, it's still today that you look at the best comedians in the world and they're Jewish. We have this in us. We have it in us. And sometimes we forget about it. And we think, yeah, what do we really need it for? We should be more serious. There's so much going on. But this is the time where we really connect through it. And if we utilize it, I think we're doing a great thing for ourselves. I think we're doing a great thing for our community. And specifically, I think we're doing a really great thing for our families when we spend the time and the energy to enjoy and connect and smile and laugh together on a holiday like this during a time like this. Thank you so much for having me, guys. I really appreciate it. It's a lot of fun tonight.
Amazing.
Thank you, everybody. Everybody have a wonderful night. Yehuda, we love you.
Love you, too.
Good night, everybody.
Love you!
Oh, my God. Good night.
Good night.
Kol HaLashon, a whole world of quality content.